Hare Krishna. Well, today is a wonderful day. We have a fresh opportunity to glorify Krishna. And we glorify Krishna, not directly, but we glorify Krishna by glorifying the devotee of Krishna. And today is the blessed appearance day of so many saints and sages, you would lose count. So many things happened today, but today we're only going to focus on one. That is the blessed appearance day of Sripad Gopal Bhatta Das Goswami. He's called Goswami. He was a Swami. He's called Gopal Bhatta because that's what his father called him, Gopal. He's called Bhatta because that was the family name, the Brahmin name. And why are we interested? Because without Gopal Bhatta Goswami, this Krishna consciousness movement would not be the same. We only study saints that have contributed something directly to your life. Who in this room knows how to do Achman? Who knows how to do Achman? Sipping of water. Who knows it the short way? Put your hand up. Who knows it the long way? Put your hand up. Congratulations. Go to the top of the class. At the end of the class, I will give you a gold star. Ladies, long way, short way? Short way? Long way? Okay. Every Brahmin should learn the long way. Why? Because it has come down to us. It's one of the gifts that we've been given. So the way we do things here in our temple in 2016, the way you put on your tilak, the way you do your achman, the way we serve the deities, the mantras that we use for serving the deities, the books that we read. When you see another devotee, who knows the prayer? Pancha kalpa trubhyascha. Who knows? Put your hand up if you know that prayer. Okay? Very important prayer. If you know that prayer, you have a debt to Gopal Bhatta Das Goswami. You see, you didn't know that, did you? See, all these prayers, they come from somewhere. They don't just pop out of thin air. You don't just find them on the internet. Okay? Now everybody thinks they can find everything on the internet, isn't it? One of the difficulties in our preaching these days is that we give them a book about Krishna. 2 weeks later, they've been on the internet and they know everything. And they come back to us and they say, what about this? What about this? I've been reading this. I've been reading that. You see? Because internet, as Vishwanath Chakravarti would have said about the internet, he said, if you knew, it's called Utsaha Mayi. Utsaha Mayi means the enthusiasm of a young boy, a young Brahmin boy, when he's in the Gurukula, he learns a few Sanskrit words, okay, and then he thinks he knows everything. Okay, he learns something a little bit, and he says, I know that. It's like a little boy who learns 2 plus 2 equals 4. And then the next day, the teacher comes and is teaching algebra. Algebra. Okay? Okay? And he says, so, x plus y equals 2 plus... Oh, I know that. I know that one. That's a 2. I know that. No, you don't. Algebra, you have to wait. This comes sometime in the future. So now we have to be very, very conscious in 2016. Don't think you know everything. Therefore, the job of a preacher is a very difficult job. Because first you have to teach people what they don't know before you have to teach people what they should know. Now you have to remove the ignorance, the ajnana, and so that you can give them the jnana. It's a very difficult uphill job. Yeah? It's very easy for the first few meetings. Hello, Hare Krishna, how are you? This is our temple. This is Krishna, this is Rama. Okay. Then after some time, it becomes difficult. Because everybody knows. I know everything. Because that is what some people, they come, I know Krishna. Practically everybody who comes to Bhaktivedanta, I know Krishna. But now English people are also saying, I know Krishna. Oh yes, I know ISKCON. Okay. Whereas some people say, I know Ishkan. The English people are saying, I know Ishkan. I know all about you. I know about Krishna. So this ajnana is something that has to be removed. Therefore, Prabhupada said, when a man goes to the piano teacher in Vienna, he goes to the top piano teacher, or two boys go to the top piano teacher, and they say, we want you to teach us. You are the top teacher. And he says, all right. He says, how much do you know? I know nothing. How much do you know? Well, I've had a few piano lessons the last year. He said, all right. And he teaches them both. And at the end, what happens? He says, from you, I will take £10. And from you, I will take £100. He said, but he's been coming for 3 months. And I've been coming for 3 months. Why are you teaching us? Why are you teaching us the same? Why are you charging us differently? He says, because you, I could teach piano. But you, I had to unteach first before I could teach. So Prabhupada said, this is a very great difficulty in the Western world. You have to unteach people before you teach them. It's a great difficulty in the Eastern world, Western world, Northern world, Southern world, wherever you go. Everybody is puffed up with knowledge. So when we come to these personalities like Gopal Bhatta Das Goswami, we should come with a straw between our teeth in humility, willing to listen. It's called empathic listening. Empathy means you see that something from the other person's point of view. That's very hard to do, you see, because Gopal Bhatta Goswami lived 500 years ago. And in the West, unfortunately, we are postmodern creatures. We have a very dim view of history. If something was 500 years ago, we think that's less valuable than today, you see. And tomorrow we will have discovered so much more. But in Krishna consciousness, you cannot say, oh, 500 years ago, they didn't know as much as we know today. And in 200 years' time, just imagine what we'll know about Krishna. Okay? It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. Most people think it works that way because most people raised on a Western analysis of history think that in the past they didn't know very much. Now we know so much. And in the future we'll know so much more. When Prabhupada came, he came to sort of remove this notion. That's why we say Om Ajnana Timirandasya, that the Guru has taken us out of darkness. So when we approach persons like Gopal Bhatta Das Goswami, we should think, actually, he knew Krishna much more than me. And therefore, what comes out of his mouth or what comes out of his pen can help me in so many ways. He's not just a figure in history. Especially if you're an English person or a European, thinking, yes, maybe they knew something, but not as much as today's ISKCON. We know so much more than Gopal Bhatta Goswami. No, actually, the truth is that what we do here today is we're trying to just put into practice a few fragments of what he taught. This is the thing. And the closer you get to know him and what he taught, the closer you'll get to the original International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So don't think that in the future, when we've, you know, learned more, we will do more and know more. Okay? I just thought I would start with that. So, many, many years ago, a great deity of the Lord, the reclining Lord Vishnu, was given to Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma, for a time, gave it to Hanuman. And this beautiful deity eventually ended up in a place known as a very nice island in the middle of the Kaveri River. And this place was, the deity was known as Ranganath. So in that place, you know, for deity worship, it can either be maintained or not maintained. Ask any head pujari in ISKCON, how difficult is it to maintain a schedule of deity worship, isn't it? Janti's going. Trinad, you know this, don't you? Yeah. It is the most difficult thing in ISKCON. The most difficult thing in the world to do maintenance, especially maintenance of the maintainer of the world. The maintainer of the world is Vishnu. So to maintain his maintenance where people have no attraction is a very, very difficult thing. And so gradually this deity was not worshipped. The worship went down to, once a day only, one offering. We have some temples in ISKCON. So recently the GBC made an announcement that you cannot install any more deities in ISKCON movement until all the deities that we have already are being looked after. You agree? Makes sense, doesn't it? Makes sense. Because everybody wants to begin. Everybody wants to create. Everybody wants to initiate. Everybody wants to install. Everybody wants to build. Everyone wants to begin. Okay? Every preacher wants to convince. Everybody wants to impress. But the maintenance, maintaining disciples, maintaining the temple, maintaining the deity, maintaining the movement, these things are much harder because they're much less attractive. Much less attractive. Who is the most important person? The person in this temple who does the same thing every day, every day, every day. Or someone who comes and leads a wonderful kirtan or gives a wonderful class or cooks a wonderful sabji and you think, wow, what a wonderful devotee that was. If we could only have these wonderful devotees here in this temple, our temple would be very good. Unfortunately, what we have here at Bhaktivedanta Manor is devotees who do the same thing, every day, every day, every day. What boring people they are. Isn't it? We have this view. But in the life of Gopal Bhatta Goswami, you will find someone who did the same thing, every day. But who also initiated, but who also started things. But what I'm saying is that it's the harder thing to get someone to maintain something. Because no one gives you the credit. If you lead a wonderful kirtan and you're spinning in circles and dancing and running up and down and sweating and banging the drum and blood is coming on the mridanga, then everybody goes, wow, that was an amazing kirtan. Amazing. But if you're there every day, just a little pair of cartels, ching, 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 ching. No sweat, no perspiration, no running, but you're there for 40 years. People go, yeah, he's there. Huh? He's there. One time Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, and he saw, coming back with his disciples for the first time, he was pointing things out to them, just teaching them about his Vrindavan neighborhood. And he saw one lady that he knew, and she was bringing water from the Yamuna. And she was bringing it to serve the deities. And he said, so he gathered, as Prabhupada did, people gathered around Prabhupada to hear what he was going to say. He said, you see that woman? He said, she's going back to Godhead at the end of this life. And of course, the American disciples were thinking, oh, wow, who is she? She must be some great saint. She must have, installed some deities, initiated some people. What did she do? He said, no. Every morning, she's going to the river and she's bringing a big jug of water for worshipping the Lord. He said, she's been doing that as long as I know and she will carry on doing it until she dies. So you see, Krishna notices the boring people. So be boring. We want to be boring in this movement. Be boring for Krishna. Okay? So I just thought I'd get that out, first of all. Because it is really, really difficult to find boring people. Because every devotee wants to be exciting and do something new. But it's very, very hard to find the boring ones. Okay. So now we're going to hear something. So this deity worship, it went down to once a day. And then it went down to once a week. And then it went down to once a month, once every Ekadashi, the pujari would come, and he would come with a ghee lamp, some incense, some flowers. And then gradually there was jungle growing up. And one day the pujari saw a tiger. That's how much things were growing up. He saw a tiger you know, when you go looking for tigers in India, you can't find them, but sometimes you find them accidentally. I was in a car once with Shivaram Swami coming back at midnight from a program. And I saw a big dog walking across the road. And all the windows were open. And being an Englishman, of course, you put your hand out the window to pat the dog. I was young. It was a tiger. Tiger, tiger, burning bright in the middle of the night. It was a tiger. So he saw a tiger. The puja went down to once a month, then once a quarter, and then eventually once a year. And then the kings, they started to come, and they started to build temples. And this deity was given a nice temple, not a big temple, but a nice temple. And then successive kings, they would build walls and houses. And they would build a wall and another wall and another wall. And it was the proof that a king is a king if he could build a wall. Well, why build a wall? You've already got one. Well, no. But if this is Vaikuntha on earth, then in Vaikuntha there are seven walls, seven gates. Okay? When the four Kumaras got to Jayanvijay, that was the seventh gate of Vaikuntha. See? There's seven pairs of Vishnu Dutas. They had to get past all of them before they got to Jayanvijay. So there's seven walls. But unfortunately, as each time goes by, the successive king has to build a bigger wall because they're built as a square. So the first king, he builds like this. And the second king, he builds like that. The third king, he builds like that. So on the inner walls, you have the Saivites, the most boring people who are serving Krishna every day. Every day they see them. They're there at the temple, bringing their water, ringing their bells. You know, why don't they do anything ever exciting? Because they're in the mode of goodness. That's why they don't do exciting things. They never get excited about anything. They're in the mode of goodness. They're worshipping the Lord. They need peace and tranquility in their hearts. Okay. That's why they never do anything except ring bells. And okay. So, and on the inside, it's called the Agraharam. The Agraharam. These Agraharams are where the Brahmanas live. So in one of those Agraharams, in the north Agraharam, there is a family, and they'd lived there for many, many years, and they were called the Bhatta family. And the father was called Venkata Bhatta. And when you go to Srirangam, and you should all go to Srirangam, it's very nice, and if you get talking to someone, they'll invite you to their house. When a Brahmin invites you to your home, you should go. Then the Brahmin's wife will cook you idli. And if you're lucky, some dosa, if you come back the next morning. So I went to one house. And I looked and there was, the house was, it looked like an ancient monument. It was just made of granite, you know, big, thick, gray granite. You know, it looked very, very solid, as if it would never, ever fall over. And I said, how long has your family been living here? He said, oh, since 1120. You know, in America, I was in Minneapolis once and I saw a sign that said ancient monument. Ancient monument. So I said, oh, I like ancient things. So I went to see the ancient monument, 1860. And here was this man serving me hot milk in his house. And the house was made in 11... When did I say? 11 something. Anyway, the point is, I said, how long has your family been living here? His family had been living there since 1120. Now, you can't find many people in England who've been living in a house since that time. But in these families, the father lives in the house, the grandfather lives in the house, the great-grand-great-great-great-great-great, and it goes back to Ramanujacharya. Oh, yes. My great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, he was a disciple of Ramanujacharya. You find lots of people like this. Anyway, so this was the This was the people who were in Srirangam at the time. Srirangam was a town of 20,000 people. Many, many people, 20,000 people. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he took sannyas in 1510 AD, he went traveling down south. Why didn't he go to the north? Why didn't he go to the east? Well, there was water to the east and China. He went to the south because there are so many temples, so many inspirational places to go. This is the heart of bhakti. Prabhupada says many Vaishnava acharyas are born in the south. So he went south. He went to Srikakulam. He went to Puri. He went to Srikakulam. Then Vizianagaram, Vishakhapatnam. He went to Nisinghachalam. Then he carried on down. He went to Ahobalam. He went to Srirangam, which is right down now in what we call Tamil Nadu. So he went down to Tamil Nadu, and then it was the rainy season. And he stayed for 4 months with the Bhatta family. And they were a very wonderful family. They were very pleased to have him. And Venkata Bhatta would daily wash the feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And the whole family would drink that water, that foot water. And he stayed there. He stayed there in the house. Just imagine having Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself in your house for a meal. Then imagine what he would speak before the meal, after the meal, when you really got to know him personally. And then imagine every day for 4 months. Every day for 4 months. So people were coming and they had to have an invitation to come. But even today, you will go to Venkata Bhatta's house. And just over the road, there's a little temple of Jagannath Swami and Narasingadev. And they worship there together. And it is said that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because he was feeling separation from Lord Jagannath, he fashioned the Jagannath deities himself. So those deities are still there, and they're still being worshipped. Still being worshipped. And you can go there, and the great, 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 great grandson of Venkata Bhatta will open up the temple for you. See, people stay where they are, not constantly moving. I know we have a movement, but they stay where they are. So, young boy was there, Gopal Bhatta. He was only 11 years old. Originally, they came from a place called Belagui. Belagui is up the river a little bit, the river Kaveri. Srirangam is on an island. The big city is called Trichy, or Trichapoli, and Tiruchapoli. And you go maybe a couple of miles straight, and you'll see the big domes, the big Gopuram, that have been built by successive acharyas. So, anyway, so when it was time for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to leave, young boy Gopal came, and he was in a flood of tears. He said, "Please don't go. Please don't leave our house. What will we do without you?" So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "All right, I will stay for a few. I'll stay for a few more days." So he stayed for a few more days. But he gave him the instruction that you stay here as long as your parents are alive, and when your parents pass away, you can come and join me in Vrindavan. So he was 11, and he waited for how many years? He waited until he was 30. He waited until he was 30 to go to join Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we worship Gopal Bhatta Goswami. We call him our Smriti Acharya. Our Smriti Acharya, because he's the person who's responsible for giving us all the various rituals that we use in our daily life in the temple. One time a professor came here and she asked me, "Can you tell me something about ritual?" I said, "Yes." She said, "Oh, good, because you're the first devotee that I've spoken to that agrees that you do rituals. I said, what do you mean? She said, well, I speak to the devotees about ritual, and they say, no, we don't do rituals. We don't do rituals. She said, but everybody does the same thing from 4:30 in the morning all the way through to breakfast. They sit in the same way. They take Charanamrita in the same way. They come up to the deities. They bow down in the same way. They go and they offer flower petals to Prabhupada in the same way. It's all very highly ritualized. And when I speak to them, they say they don't do rituals. Why is that? I said, because rituals have a tendency to become invisible. I said, it's like the Chinese goldfish. She said, what? She said, well, you know the Chinese goldfish story? I said, no. I said, well, if you ask a Chinese goldfish swimming around in the, like, if you ask him, how do you like the water in there? He'll say, what water? There's no water. I don't see any water. When something is all around you, you don't see it. So when ritual is all around you, it disappears. You're swimming in it from the moment you put on your tilak in the morning to the prayers that you chant when you come downstairs to the sharirara vijajal before you. It's 4 or 5 hours of ritual. But you do it every day and then it disappears. You don't think anything of it. In fact, you don't think anything of it that when a stranger comes to the temple, you just carry on. You won't even explain the ritual that you're doing, and they'll be very bewildered. What am I supposed to do? He just bowed down. He just rang a bell. Am I supposed to do these things? What's that guy on the altar waving a white feather at the statues for? Why is it peacock feather? Why are they dancing around a plant? Okay? Why are they dancing around a plant? It's only 5 o'clock in the morning. They just woke me up to come down and dance around a potted plant. What's going on? He said, you're swimming in the ritual, but you don't understand. Other people may need a handbook of understanding why we do these things. So Gopal Bhatta Goswami wrote the handbook. You read the handbook, and you know. Then so he wrote Hari Bhakti Vilas. Well, actually, he wrote a small book called Lagu Hari Bhakti Vilas. And then the bigger Hari Bhakti Vilas was written by Sanatan Goswami. And then Sanatan Goswami gave Gopal Bhatta's name to that. So he came, when he came to Vrindavan, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very pleased to hear that finally this Gopal Bhatta had come to live in Vrindavan. And he was very generous with him, actually. He's very generous with him. Because he sent him several things. He sent him two sets of his inner cloth, a set of outer cloth. He sent him his sitting place, a wooden sitting platform that you do puja on. He sent him that. So all these items were sent to the Goswamis who were then in Vrindavan to be given to Gopal Bhatta Goswami. I mean, imagine, what a gift. And on one day a year, you can still go to the Radharaman temple and you can still see the place where or the clothing that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sent to Gopal Bhatta Goswami. Just imagine. Very generous. So he said to Rupa and Sanatan, you look after Gopal Bhatta as if he was your younger brother. And so they did that. So they worked together. He wanted him to help them to write scriptures. This was the task of the Goswamis. Lord Nityananda Prabhu had been given another task. To Lord Nityananda, he said, you know, don't write scriptures, but you preach. So they were preaching everywhere. But to the Goswamis, you excavate the holy places and you write scriptures. So then Hari Bhakti Vilas is for Archana. It's for Archana and Nityaseva. It is for why our tilak is the shape that it is, why our sika is the size that it is, why our neck beads are the shape that they are. All the different things about how a devotee is, what time in the morning you get up, why we wear dhotis, not trousers, All these things can be found in Hari Bhakti Vilas. So there are 20 chapters, how you find a spiritual master, how you serve the spiritual master, who a spiritual master is, what qualities to look for, what color the spiritual master's teeth should be, all the details. There are many, many details. Spiritual master's teeth is black. Don't get initiated by him. Okay? And he says that. If he's got a lot of hair or not enough hair, don't get initiated by him. If he's too old, don't get initiated by him. Okay? If he's... there's a long list of things. Of course, if you followed those lists in ISKCON, nobody would get initiated, I think. But Gopal Bhatta has written these. Now, this all comes from Pancharatra. Pancharatra is the knowledge given over Pancha, five Ratra nights. And Lord Narayan gives knowledge to how to worship him. To Lord Shiva, to Narada Muni. So there is a Narada Pancharatra, which we follow, which was written just over the road from a beautiful place called Kusum Sarovara. But normally what happens is when devotees go to Kusum Sarovara, they're looking this way at all the nice things that were built by the king. They're not looking this way back in the jungle to the place where Narada Muni wrote the Narada Pancharatra. Am I right? So then you have to find these places. So then Lord Shiva wrote the Ahirbhudnya Samhita. This is how to worship Lord Vishnu, written by Lord Shiva. And then, who else? Lakshmi wrote the Lakshmi Tantra. So all of these books, 200 of these books, are put in a big funnel and funneled down into the Hari Bhakti Vilas. So Hari Bhakti Vilas quotes from 200 different scriptures. So what else? Well, there's how to install the deity, how to worship the deity on a daily basis, how to worship the deity on the deity's nakshatra, or special star, when the installation took place, how to celebrate a Brahmotsavam, how to celebrate the day when the deity was installed, how to do occasional pujas, how many pujas to have, what there should be for the bhoga offerings, how to make sweets, how to do an abhishek, how to celebrate a festival, see? How to do fire yagya for the pleasure of the deities. All these things are included. So then he wrote another, well, actually before that he wrote a book on how Vaishnavas can do samskaras. Samskar is really just for householders. If you're a householder, you're interested in samskaras, because there's a lot of it about babies. Samskaras is, you know, how to care for the life of another human being by occasionally connecting that life to the Lord in a particular way. So he wrote a book about that, all about the main ten samskaras, how to celebrate them, and how to do it in such a way that we can serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Most samskaras taken from the Vedas, they have demigods as the recipient of offerings. So in our tradition, we worship, instead of Ganesh, we worship Vishvakshena. Instead of the Ten Directions, we worship the Mahajans. Instead of the Nine Planets, we worship the Navayogendras. In this way, substituting Vishnu and the Vaishnavas for all these things. So every samskar can be an occasion for developing devotion to the Lord. So he wrote that book. And from the Pancharatra and Hari Bhakti Vilas comes the principles of devotion, which was later writ up by Rupa Goswami as the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is how to serve Krishna, different ways of serving Krishna, and the realizations that you will get from serving Krishna, and how many stages you will pass through on the way to developing Krishna prema. So all these things are included. So unless you write these things down, they get forgotten. If you ask me what Prabhupada said in a class when I was younger, although Prabhupada was just sitting there and I was just sitting here, it's all gone. It's all gone. So I'm very glad that Prabhupada wrote things down. Just me personally. I'm very glad that he wrote things down, because if he hadn't, I would have completely forgotten what my guru said. Very important thing to write down what the guru says, because sometimes he says things to other people. It's not just you, because you're not his only disciple. So he may go to another town and say something, and another town and say something. You have to put that all together, and you have to read that. Okay. So we write things down. So Hari Bhakti Vilas. Vilas means chapter. There's 20 chapters. Then he wrote a book called Samskar Deepika. Samskar Deepika. And Samskar Deepika is just the rituals for taking sannyas. Satkriya Saradipika is a small book for other rituals. So anyway, he also wrote... when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in the south, he picked up two books that were especially important, and he had them copied. Do you know what they were? Brahma Samhita and Krishna Karanamrita. Yes, the Krishna Karanamrita. And it said that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very pleased to have found these scriptures and engaged Brahmins in copying them. That's how you did before the age of printing. You copied books personally by hand. So then, along with copying the books, normally you write a bhashya, a commentary. And the commentary helps people to understand the Sanskrit, which is often in codes. It's often very terse, very tight. You know, it's like when I hear two devotees talking about computers. It's like they're talking in another language. Or when two very young people are talking about their mobile phone, I can't understand what they're talking about contracts and terms. And, you know, to me, a phone is just a phone. I don't understand these things, you see. Or when I hear two businessmen talking about the stock exchange, I don't know what they're talking about. It's another language. So don't expect to come to anything which is a very defined, sophisticated way of communication with its own language without the need of a purport. You need a purport. And you also need a guru to give you the purport on the purport. See? So in this way, you finally get the bhashya, and you get the tika, which is the commentary on the bhashya. So he wrote a commentary on the Krishna Karanamrita. And then... when he had done these things, sometime during that stage, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in 1534, he left this world. Actually, he left this world only 4 years after Gopal Bhatta Goswami came to Vrindavan. Eventually, Gopal Bhatta Goswami was 45 years, most of it at Radhakund. 45 years. But only 4 years after he'd come to Vrindavan, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left. So he was absolutely distraught. Didn't know what to do with himself. Took shelter of the Goswamis. Yes, that's a fact. But what are we going to do now? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has gone from this world, our very object of affection, our object of devotion. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to him in a dream. And he said, if you want to have my darshan, he said, go to Nepal. Go up to Nepal. Well, this is very strange. He's all the way from Sri Rangam in the south. Why does he have to go to all the way to Nepal? Okay. So he went to Nepal. He went to the Kali Gandaki, where you go. And as he was taking his bath, he had a kamandalu. And he saw that some Shalagram Shilas from the river there were coming into his pot. And of course, you know, he... You know, our tradition is more focused on Govardhan, Shila, and the holy name and the deity of the Lord, the carved image of Krishna. So then he took the Shilas out and he put them down to the side. He took bath again. Again he saw the Shilas. And three times it happened. When something happens three times, or three Brahmins tell you something, okay, or your car gives you problems three times, or three times you get arrested in one town, you should know maybe there's a kind of a message coming to you from the universe or God or whatever. So he said, all right, I will take these. So he took 12 Shilas, because Shastra says if you have 12 Shilas, 12 Shalagrams, it turns your home into a Tirtha, turns your home into a place of pilgrimage. So he did that. And he was, of course, coming from the Sri Vaishnava tradition, he knew all about Shalagram Puja. And Prabhupada said, Shalagram Puja, he said, it is very simple. He said, mantras, sleeping. Mantras, sleeping. Mantras, putting the deity to sleep. Like this, he said, quite simple. So anyway, one day a rich man came to Vrindavan and he was handing out clothing and flutes and shringar and necklaces and everything to the different, you know, people, the different sadhus. And Gopal Bhatta Goswami said, no, that's, you know, it's all right, I have some. No, you take, I have to give. Very rich man had come to Vrindavan, come all the way. All right, I'll take your service and offer it to the Lord. So he spread all the things before the Lord, and he said, my Lord, he said, I can't even put a necklace on you. It's, you know, Shalagram Shila is a round stone. You know, the necklace just falls off. Whatever you do, you can't put a necklace on a Shalagram. Well, you can, but... So he said, my Lord, I just wish that you had form, because then I would be able to serve you in some way. Anyway, he put all the items away. And it was Nrisimhadev's appearance day. That's why the rich man had come. It was a big occasion in the Vaishnava world. Nrisimhadev's is a big festival. Even today, we celebrate that day. It's only one of the only days of the year you get all the devotees out on Harinam. One of the only days of the year when you have a special thing. And so that evening he went to sleep late. He'd put the shalagrams in a wicker basket. And then early the next morning he went down to the river to bathe. He came back. He opened up the basket and there was a beautiful black form of the boy Krishna. One large shila had become a young boy. And he was astonished. Krishna had reciprocated with him. And in 1542, he installed the Lord and built the beautiful temple for him. And this temple is still there today. Beautiful temple. It was one of the few temples the Prabhupada told everybody. He said, you go to that temple and you see how Krishna should be worshipped. Standard of devotion. And Vishwambar Goswami, he remembers Prabhupada with fondness. So in the 1960s in Vrindavan, at one time Srila Prabhupada would ride a bicycle. And he would ride a bike past the temple. And Vishwambar Goswami said Prabhupada's bike had something on one wheel. So every time the wheel went round, it went so you would hear Prabhupada coming. And Prabhupada would ring the bell. Ding, 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 ding. This is the village Prabhupada, Vrindavan Prabhupada, before he became world acharya. So Prabhupada was there and he would go to the Radharaman temple. Now, of course, we say Radha Raman, Raman, the Sanatan and Rupa, gave the deity the name, but there was no Radharani. So she is represented by her Shringar and her Alankaram. She's represented in this way. And At one point, Gopal Bhatta Goswami was considering how will the deity worship be maintained, because he came from a tradition in which the deity worship had been A, allowed to drop until nothing, B, threatened. I won't tell you the story, the horrific stories about how conquering armies came to Srirangam and killed thousands of people, many, many Brahmins. So how will deity worship be continued and how will it be protected? What is the security for the deity? How will we maintain the deity? And traditionally, your disciples do this, but the other tradition is that you will have, certainly in the Sri Vaishnava tradition, is that your son will keep the deity worship in the family. And he said, "Oh, I have no children." So then he had gone to Rishikesh at one point. And while he was in Rishikesh, he also stayed in the home of a merchant, and the merchant had no children. So he said, "Please bless me, Saruji, that I will have a child." He said, "Tatastu, I bless you that you will have a child, bless you that you'll have a son." He said, "But I'll bless you on one condition." You've got to watch these sadhus. He said, "I bless you on one condition, that when the young boy is old enough, you send him to me and I will initiate him. I will train him." He said, "Yes, of course." So at 10 years of age, this one time he came back to the temple and he saw this young boy sitting on the doorstep. "Who are you?" "Oh, my name is Gopinath. My name is Gopinath." And he said, "Well, Gopinath, very good. I'm going to initiate you now. I'm going to train you." See, he didn't ask him, "Who's your mentor? Where are you from? Have you filled in your sadhana chart?" He said, "All right." He said, "You're 10 years old, going on 11. Okay, your father sent you here. I'll initiate." Because initiation means the beginning, you see. It's the beginning of everything that you learn. You can't learn anything without becoming initiated. That's the idea. Anyway, so then when it came time for him to be married, they said that the only guru's instruction that you can refuse is if the guru asks you to be married. So then, well, we have the same problem. If you're not going to be married, then how will my Radharaman puja go on? So he had another brother by that time. The father was successful in having another boy, and his name was Damodar. Damodar Goswami also had three... That's right, Damodar had three boys whose names were Harnath, Mathuranath, and Harirama. And from these original came the... And Damodar originally wrote the codes on how the deity worship should be done. So we're also doing that for Radha Gokulananda, because we look out and we see the future, and we want to safeguard the future for Radha Gokulananda. Because if ISKCON is ISKCON in the future, it will mean that people come and people go. So who will look after Radha Gokulananda in the future? We have to make sure that things go on as Prabhupada has started them. So it is not, they don't belong to any one of us, they belong to everybody and they belong to the future. So how are we going to safeguard that? Well, we know how difficult it is, Trinad, Api, Sunichena. We know how difficult it is to get Brahmins, first of all, just getting a Brahmin. Then there seems to be this very strange concept that we have that I will become a Brahmin, but I won't serve the deities. It's a very strange concept. It's like saying, I will become a Brahmin, but now I won't wear tilak. Being a Brahmin means you serve the deity. That's what it's all about. It's like getting a book bag and not going on book distribution. It's like someone gives you a book bag, okay, and that you go to the warehouse and you fill it up with books. They drive you to the spot, and then you say, you know what, I'm not going out. you'd say, Prabhuji. I'm putting on the Italian accent now. Prabhu, why you come all the way? You don't want to go on book distribution. And he would convince you, as he does, to go on book distribution. So, you have a sacred thread, you have all the mantras, you're all ready to go, and no, I want to daily worship. Okay? Well, you're a Brahmin. I've redefined Guru Maharaj. I've redefined being a Brahmin. This is what it means now. So there's no question. So we really need Brahmins. So how is that going to go on? So he safeguarded it by having all the three sons take turns at the puja. Because you see, Brahmins also have to make money. You have to live somewhere. You have to pay the rent. Or in India, you have to build something somewhere. You have to have some land. And you have to get vegetables. Now, we sometimes think of Brahmins as being the people that, you know, everybody's queuing up to give them vegetables. I've been a Brahmin since 1975. I open my front door every morning. There's not one vegetable on the front porch. Nobody in my whole life has ever given me a vegetable. I'm a Brahmin. No one comes to my house and gives me vegetables. Why? Well, because we're surrounded by people who don't give vegetables to Brahmins. Okay? So it's not just that you can live in Vrindavan, not just that you can go to a place and immediately all your financial worries will be solved. And in the same way, deity worship is expensive, especially when you have a public temple. So you have to get the balance right. You have to get the public to give. You have to make sure that the Brahmins don't starve. See, Brahmins is very poverty-stricken. You know, your careers advice officer at school will never tell you, you know what, I think you could be a Brahmin. Why? Because yajana, yajana, patana, patana, these six things that a Brahmin does, only two of them occasionally will give you some funding. And the others you just do for your own purification and for the purification of others. If people aren't generous, okay? Therefore, we have so many stories that begin, once upon a time, there was a poor Brahmin. Okay? Story always starts like that. So they were doing something, and then they came back. And for several months of the year, 4 months of the year, they would do this, or they would split it in different ways. So anyway, this has gone down, 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 down to today. And today, sometimes you are lucky if your family, your whole family, gets to do 3 days of seva for Radharaman. And you're looking forward to that 3 days. Sometimes, I don't know what it is, 2 years, 3 years, or something like that. Huh? 4 or 5 years. So every 4 or 5 years, your family gets to do the seva for 3 days. Just like we've just had the Pariyaya. Pariyaya in Udupi in early January, Swami Vishvesh Tirtha, he has taken up the 2-year Pariyaya of serving the deity. And that happens once every 14 years. So he's had to wait all these years to do this seva. But he's done this seva 5 times. In his life. So 5 cycles of 14 years. So now this is his 5th time. He's 85. He took initiation when he was 8. He took sannyas when he was 14. So people dedicate themselves to the deity. So how are you going to find people like that? So Gopal Bhatta Goswami was able to. And today now we have the 18th generation. 18th generation. So the deity worship there is so loving and so detailed that I think Yamuna was told by Prabhupada to go. Prabhupada told Mother Yamuna to go there and make a detailed study. So she came away with drawings and many nice detailed studies of how the puja was conducted. Every day is a festival. Every day a different kind of festival. Every day a different kind of outfit. And every day, different kind of flowers, and then sometimes there are backdrops made with dried fruit. sometimes backdrops made of cashew nuts, backdrops made of different things, and then he has different vehicles. Sometimes he'll come out in the daily greeting, he's on the boat. Okay. Anyway, so in the evening there's a beautiful chorus of singers come. It's the best nighttime entertainment in Vrindavan, to go to the Radharaman temple and listen to the the flute player and the bhajan singers and like that. So we have a long relationship with the Radharaman temple in both in 1906 and 1912. Sarvabhauma Madhusudan Goswami, who was the great-great-grandfather, he met with Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And then later on in 1911, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur read his writings to the family, and they wrote down in their diary, and we liked him very much. And of course, Prabhupada's kept up that relationship. And even today, ISKCON devotees, they regularly visit this temple and are regularly invited by Sri Padmanabh Goswami to come and have a meal with them. And you could say that this one temple and the continuity of their puja has influenced ISKCON standards all over the world. When people come to an ISKCON temple, they see a standard of puja that they do not often see in other places. There are things that we do that are very high standard, and people, they like that very much. So that is it. I think that I will finish there. We have, you see, from the puja comes the book distribution. Because when Gopal Bhatta Goswami, he wrote the, if you like, the synopsis, the short version of the Shat Sandarbha, and he wrote the introduction, and Jiva Goswami wrote the rest. And then all these different books were given to his disciple for taking back to Bengal, because the philosophy of the Goswamis needed to reach Bengal, because there were different, you could say there were three different Hare Krishna movements. There was the Jagannath Puri movement, the Bengali movement, and the Vrindavan movement. And they had to combine their resources by sharing information so that there will be a standard Gaudiya tradition. So then his disciple, Gopal Bhatta Goswami's disciple, Srinivas Acharya, became the first, you could say, the first book distributor. So our tradition of book distribution springs from the tradition of puja and writing. Because unless you're doing it, how can you sell a book about it? You've got to do the Krishna consciousness before you sell a book about Krishna consciousness, right? Am I right? Yeah. The idea is that you've got to know what you're talking about before you go out there and talk to other people about it. So then Srinivas Acharya, you know that story, there was many adventures on the way. But that was his disciple. So our book distribution, our puja, the way we put on our tilak, and the books that we read, including Nectar of Devotion, these are all coming from Gopal Bhatta Goswami, whose appearance day is today. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.